kemur innkast í átt á honum Kári flikkar Raggi Sig er búinn að jafna fyrir Íslendinga Raggi Sig búinn að jafna hér bara rétt eftir að við lendum undir King Raggi King Raggi að blöði staðurinn eitt í nýs gjör svo vel
So that is not the sound of a melting man from Indiana Jones. That is actually the Icelandic commentator after the Euro goal in 2016. How'd you feel about that goal?
A phenomenal goal. Even better call from the booth, Thomas.
That will lead the way. Welcome, welcome to the Three Beards World Cup podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller. He is Dr. Pete, and we are doing the final preview episode. Now, mind you, that is just a preview, Dr. Pete. We will be doing match reviews and previews going forward, but this is the last preview episode because the World Cup starts on Thursday with Saudi Arabia versus Russia. I think I'm ready, although you questioned my readiness like 10 minutes ago. I think I'm ready.
Sure, it's been a huge buildup. We've been reading about it for the last 4 years. We've been crushed by United States not being in there, but I've gradually gotten back up to a fever pitch. Actually, before Thursday, I'm ready for tomorrow's crucial decision on who's getting the World Cup in 2026.
Yeah, so 9 a.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday, I believe it's announced. I will be...
I'm nervous.
In D.C.?
Are you nervous?
Yeah, I'm really nervous. All the noise coming out of the FIFA big heads is that they like the bid and that the United States joint bid is much better off than the Moroccan bid. But you never know with stuff like this, especially when it comes to FIFA.
Oh, there's so much money that's exchanged behind closed doors. Yeah. I mean, if you can buy a ref, World Cup ref for $600, I mean,
it's a great point. It's a great point.
How easy is it to buy a vote, you know, to get the final bid?
I hate to be like a sourpuss about it and be real bitter, but I'm going to be if we don't get it. And I'm going to be throwing allegations everywhere. So I think Morocco better lawyer.
Yeah, I was pissed after the Qatar disaster when they got it for no reason other than the fact that they poured in a bunch of oil money. So if this happens again, I mean, Morocco doesn't have the infrastructure. They're going to have to spend $15 billion, which makes no sense for their country, honestly.
Yeah.
So, and I'm selfish, and I want to watch World Cup games and only have to drive 2 hours to get there.
Yes. And we like Morocco. We just want the World Cup. We're very selfish, and we want the World Cup where we are. Well, Dr. Pete, let's get started here. We have a handful of players that are going to affect the results of the World Cup. We've already covered the players to watch and the best players. Some of these will be repeats, but we're going to go over a list of players in every group, one or two, that are going to actually affect the end game of the group based on whether they play well, whether they play poorly, or whether they get sent off.
Yeah, I like that. You know, give everybody a preview of, you know, a couple players. Not every group has a bunch of superstar teams in there, so it may be a guy that you might not know as well who's going to make the big difference and decide, you know, who's going to come in second, who's going to go home.
Exactly. So we're also going to go over some possible breakout stars and some possible problems that could develop with the VAR system, which is review, essentially. There's not a lot known about it, but we're going to go over it anyways. It's important. We're also going to discuss the hooligans a little bit and a couple of the other issues that could touch on the World Cup. And we're going to preview Saudi Arabia and Russia. Just to get started on Thursday, Dr. Pete, are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go, and I'm going to make the point that I think the biggest change to happen in soccer in the modern era is VAR. And most of us have no idea how it's going to be implemented.
Yeah, that's fair. We'll get into it. Let's start with our game-breaking players. So again, this is a category of players that will make or break the groups they're in. So if they play well, they could propel their team into the lead in the group, to take the group down and move forward. If they play poorly, they could sink their team. If they get sent off, if they get injured, they could have major consequences on the group. So let's start with Group A, Dr. Pete. Now, we have in this group Russia, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Uruguay, and it's easy to go and pick a player like, you know, Luis Suarez. If he bites somebody, that's going to have major implications. That would be easy to do. It would also be easy to pick Mo Salah.
Yeah.
Because he's injured.
Yeah, and, you know, he's had such a good year, and everybody's very anxious to see if he ends up out on the field, which I think he certainly will. And my bet is he's going to be about 80-90% effective. Get a couple goals.
Yeah.
You know, not sure if they're going to eke through, but we're going to talk about some other players who might have an impact that you don't know.
Yeah, we are going to pick, and by we, I mean me, are going to pick Alexander Golovin of CSKA Moscow of Russia. So the reason I'm picking him is because Russia is, they've actually moved from 40-1 to 50-1. They dropped back a little bit. But that would make them the second strongest in the group by a mile as far as Vegas is concerned. And if Russia's going to get through, as every host has done since the beginning of the World Cup, except for South Africa in 2010, every other host has gotten through at least to the knockout stages, including a ridiculous Cinderella run by 2002 South Korea. So we can look at Russia, and if they're going to get through, which I do believe they will, it'll be Golovin that puts them through.
Yeah, and the host always benefits from being in a weaker group in general, just based on the way the seeding is. And you throw in the home field fan advantage, and if you believe in it, the home field reffing advantage, which has been, you know, proven in most other sports.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he's definitely their man, and I believe he's, you know, rumored to be going to Manchester United right now. So if he has a great tournament, might be seeing out a little bit more. I've seen some ridiculous transfer target values for him, by the way.
Yeah, I hate transfers. If we're talking about clubs, I hate transfers post-World Cup. Manchester United's already done a lot of their work. I think they've signed two, and they're working on their third. But I don't like inflated prices that come from the World Cup. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with United, with Real Madrid, with all the teams, really, because you're going to have guys whose value triples or more, especially from some of the smaller nations. We're going to see guys that maybe we've never heard of. They're going to blow up, and all of a sudden they're going to be on, you know, Real Madrid or something like that. I mean, you look at Keylor Navas, not that he played poorly before the 2014 Cup, but the 2014 Cup put him on Real Madrid.
Yeah, and you only need to score two or three goals to, you know, make your star in Russia this year. So
yeah,
you're right. It inflates your value so much. And that's why a lot of the agents are waiting for things to go down in Russia so that they can inflate their star's value so they can get much more money.
Absolutely. Moving on to Group B, we have Portugal, Spain, Iran, and Morocco. So for this one, you want to pick a player?
You know, for this one, I really like Isco for Spain. I know there's a lot of other impact players on there, but I think he could be a tremendous super sub. And I don't even think they need him for the group stage. I think they need him. They're going to run into a juggernaut in the quarterfinals, most likely in Argentina. So I think he's going to not only affect that game, but affect their chances to perform overall in the tournament. Obviously, there are other guys in Spain you could pick that are important, but I like him as a really solid impact player off the bench. Just my take on it.
I like it. I think he'll start, though.
You think he is going to start?
I think he'll start. He's been scoring a lot of goals. That being said, I mean, they have so much firepower that if they want to play a different system, like against Portugal, I think then they could put him on the bench. But I do think he'll start against Iran and Morocco because, you know, they'll go with a more attacking lineup there. But
I mean, he's definitely good enough to start. He hasn't started every qualifier, but
no, but I think he had a hat trick in his last qualifying game.
Yeah. Oh, I love watching him play. And so he's my guy. Who'd you have in the group?
If I was going to pick somebody in the group, I actually was going to pick Pepe. Just to see not whether or not he would get sent off, but how he would get himself sent off. And I think that how he plays and how that kind of ancient Portugal backline plays is what will dictate the pace of the group, because they could win the group. Like if their backline shows up and shuts Spain down, they could win the group, and then if their back line is leaking, they could lose the group and maybe not even get a point.
Sure. And Pepe may be the most likely player in the tournament to get to be the first one to get a retroactive red card.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely true. And that's, of course, that's a result of the new systems that they're applying.
How proud his family would be.
I mean, at this point, I'm pretty sure that the Pepe family is probably familiar with red cards and his role in them. So I don't really think that it would bother them too much. Moving on to Group C, we have France, Australia, Peru, and Denmark. So, Dr. Pete, would you like to pick first?
So I'm going to go with one of your boys, one of your Manchester United boys, and Paul Pogba. I honestly have no idea how good he's going to be during the World Cup. I think that he could be one of the top three players in the tournament. I think that he could play absolutely awful and get booed off the pitch. I honestly have no idea how he's going to play. He's obviously supremely talented, but some of his performances for Man United this year against some bad teams certainly left a lot to be desired. So I feel like France will go as far as he takes them. You know, the rest of their firepower, I think they're going to help them get along, but they're probably going to run into Brazil in the semifinals. If, you know, they don't have that hard of a round of 16, I think they might run into Uruguay. But, I mean, they got a clear path to the semis. So I really am anxious to see what Paul Pogba is going to do during the tournament.
I think that's a good shout there. I'm going to go with his counterpart, N'Golo Kanté, and how he offsets Pogba's offensive runs and basic wanderings around the pitch. If N'Golo Kanté can carry the weight of Paul Pogba, which he can do and has done as one of the best defensive midfielders in the world, then I think France, between the two of those players, could go all the way to the finals and maybe even win it. So that was N'Golo Kanté and Pogba. Group D, Argentina, Iceland, Croatia, and Nigeria. I'm going to pick this one first, Pete. I'm going to pick Gonzalo Higuain. Whether or not Gonzalo Higuain starts scoring and scores often is a huge part of how far Argentina goes.
Yeah, I think you can say that for most of Argentina's supporting cast, but definitely Higuain. I like that pick for sure.
He's healthy. Aguero is coming back after a knee injury and would not start, but Higuain has had problems before scoring consistently in big matches. I think he's an excellent finisher, but I think Aguero is actually a little bit better than Higuain. I mean, you can argue all over if you want to there. And if Higuain gets hot, then Aguero can stay on the bench. The good news is they do have Aguero coming off the bench.
Yeah, and I think Argentina, if you look at the way the brackets are set up, they have one of the toughest routes to the title. So they could potentially run into Spain in the quarters, Germany in the semis, and Brazil or France in the finals, if you're just going by Vegas odds. So they're going to have to probably beat three heavy favorites to win the title, and they're going to need all of those guys up top to pitch in. Messi alone, if he's the only one that's playing well, if Higuain lays an egg, then they're going home early.
Yeah, I mean, you could also pick the Argentinian goalie, but I think that if Higuain rolls, then, I mean, I think obviously everybody wants to pick Messi, right?
Sure.
But I think if Higuain rolls, it takes all that weight off Messi and allows Messi to do his thing. I think Messi will score three or four goals and be excellent, and the narrative will be Lionel Messi, did he win a World Cup? But really, it comes down to who comes in behind him.
Agree completely.
All right, Group E, Brazil, Switzerland, Costa Rica, and Serbia. Would you like to pick a player from here?
Yeah, this is an obvious pick. I was trying to stay away from the best players in the tournament. But Neymar, for me, has the makings of a classic Brazilian striker that can just take over the World Cup, much like a Rivaldo or a Ronaldo or Pelé. And I really think that he is ready to take over the tournament. And I think he's already got 55 goals for Brazil, Tom.
I
mean, he's going to be the all-time leading scorer for Brazil by the time he's 28 years old. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, which is amazing. The only thing I would say about that is that a lot of Brazilian strikers, for whatever reason, flame out around 28, 29.
Yeah, that's true.
Ronaldo, he had injury problems, etc., but he wasn't at the top of his game when most strikers peak. That's generally true, but, you know, how can you say that about a player who has done as much as he has, Neymar, that is, at such a young age and going forward? And, you know, the only other thing you would say is that there's always a new Brazilian, 18-year-old Brazilian coming up that lights the world on fire, it seems like.
Yeah, they always have more guys in the stable that are ready to take over your job. But for me, I really think that, especially what happened in the last World Cup, I don't think they're necessarily looking for revenge. You guys talked about that before, how it's not really about revenge.
I don't really care about
But, you know, there's something to be said. You got humiliated in the last World Cup on your home soil. I think they're going to be laser-focused this time, and I expect him to score. I expect him to win the Golden Boot, honestly.
Okay, good pick for Golden Boot there. I'm going to go with Sergej Milinkovic-Savic of Serbia. He will determine who finishes second in that group. I believe that he will either have an excellent tournament or have a stinker, and if he has a stinker, Pete, then Serbia's out.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick, and Serbia could easily sneak into that second spot. No question about it.
All right, Group F, Germany, Mexico, Sweden, and South Korea. So this is a tough one because, I mean, you could pick Thomas Muller, who has 10 World Cup goals. But again, I like your idea of staying away from the best players. He's been a little bit on and off. I'm not going to pick him. Instead, I'm going to pick Chicharito for Mexico.
Okay.
I don't think he's their best player. I think Chucky Lozano is, and Chucky Lozano will have more of an impact on Mexico in the run of play. But if Chicharito is scoring, then I think Mexico goes to the second round.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, but if he's in the right setup and you're getting the ball to him, you know, in the 6 or in the 12, he's going to score. And he could – the thing about Chicharito is he might only be playing 4 games, because if they don't win the group – they're going to run into Brazil. And that's what kills me for Mexico. I think they've got a very talented squad this year. And if they were in any other setup, I mean, they've got to find a way. Really, their whole tournament, Tom, basically their Germany game is a knockout game to me. Because if they lose that Germany game, they have no shot at winning first place in the group. And so they're going to head to play Brazil in the quarterfinals. Sorry, the round of 16.
Yes, and if they go that path, and they will be knocked out at the same point that they get knocked out in pretty much every tournament.
Last season's 1990.
Yeah. So, Group G, Belgium, Panama, Tunisia, and England. I am going to pick Raheem Sterling. If Raheem Sterling is dribbling confidently and passing from the byline to set up Harry Kane and getting fouls in the penalty box for penalty kicks, I think England has an outside chance, or maybe even an inside chance, to win Group G over Belgium and to go further in the tournament. They need a player who is dynamic and who can step up and strike some fear into the defenders. And if Raheem Sterling is on his game, dribbling in short and in small spaces, then I think that England can go farther than they've been in years.
Yeah, and he had so many big goals late in the games for Manchester City this year. If you're a Manchester City fan, he was incredibly exciting to watch. If you're another fan, a fan of another team, it was not that much fun to watch. But I'm going to go with, you know, as tempting as it is to pick one of my Tottenham boys on the England national team, I'm actually going to go with Lukaku on Belgium. Tom, I love the Belgium team. I'm so sad that they're going to run into Brazil in the quarterfinals, because I think if they got an easier run, they could easily go all the way to the finals, but I don't think that's going to happen. But you look at their squad on paper, I just love their squad. And I think Lukaku, especially, he's in form. I think he's one of the most underrated. He was one of the most underrated number nines. You know, he started off very quietly this year. There were a lot of question marks about him. But, I mean, he definitely proved his worth. And he can bully any defense. And I love that going into the World Cup. I mean, he can just wrestle two dudes down in the box and somehow put the ball in the net.
Yeah, he's been on fire for his international club as well, for Belgium. Yeah.
And he's going to have De Bruyne and Hazard feeding him balls. I mean, that England Belgium game is going to be one to mark in the calendar for sure.
Absolutely it is. Group H, Poland, Senegal, Colombia, and Japan. I will start. I will say Peter Zielinski for Poland because he's the man that has to set up Lewandowski and run the gauntlet in the midfield. He'll have to take on a tough Senegalese midfield and a tough Colombian midfield as well. And then on the backside of that, he'll have to take apart Japan. I think Zielinski is a pivotal player in Group H.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest with you, Tom. I know about five players in Group H. I know a couple of Colombian players, you know, Davison Sanchez, a couple other guys that play in the Prem. But to me, Group H is a little bit boring. I do like Poland's got some firepower up top. But I'll let you weigh in on that one. I'll hold my vote on that.
That's fair. I disagree with it being boring, though. I think it's actually one of the most interesting groups because in all the other groups, you have a clear number one or at least close to it. In this one, I think any of the top three or any of the three
could finish first. I think boring was the wrong word. Anonymous is a better descriptive term. There you
go. Anonymous. Much nicer. Much nicer. So those are our impact players. Dr. Pete, you already mentioned your Golden Boot winner in Neymar. Is there anybody else you would consider for the award?
Are we talking about a long shot? Or are we talking about, like, let's say, who the best threats are?
Let's pick three, and you can tell me, based on the projected path to the World Cup that you've been looking at from the Vegas odds.
Okay, so I'd say number one for me is Neymar. Number two would be Messi. And number three, go with our old friend, Thomas Mueller.
Okay, so Neymar, I like because I think that Brazil has a good chance to go through, and I think they have a good chance to go a long way. Obviously, the talent underneath him is amazing, and I would agree with you. He's the number one contender to win the Golden Boot. I'm going to go with a number two of Romelu Lukaku.
I had him as my sort of long shot, but not that much of a long shot. I think he could easily score five or six goals.
Well, the reason I think that is because he's playing Panama and Tunisia in the group and England. I mean, he's got a really, really good group to score goals on. I think there's a good chance that Belgium puts the sword to Panama and Tunisia. And I think that, you know, a lot of times a Golden Boot winner only has five goals.
Yeah.
So I think that Lukaku's a good shout there. And my last pick would probably be Gonzalo Higuain. I know we opened the show talking about him possibly being an impact player if he doesn't play well. The flip side of that is if he does play well, then they're going all the way to the finals and they're going to win.
Yeah, I have a tough time seeing him get past two or three goals. I just have trouble looking past his history. Looking back at those clips from the last World Cup, he's had some bad misses, man.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. He has. Also got annihilated by Manuel Neuer in that game.
Yeah. Manuel Neuer is another guy for me who's a big impact player. If he plays like the best goalkeeper in the world, you know, Germany's going to win the tournament.
Fair enough. Now, we already went over who I think is most likely to get a red card. Do you have anybody you would put in that conversation?
Davinson Sanchez for our team does some dumb stuff for Tottenham.
Colombia plays for Colombia in the back.
He's pretty young. On the world stage, I could see him doing something stupid.
Okay, how about this? Which English player do you think would be most likely to get sent off? Keep in mind, Wayne Rooney is not going.
Dele Alli could end up getting a card for diving. He could end up headbutting an Italian. Maybe not because they're not going.
Maybe not on the field.
No, most likely. Yeah, I think Dele Alli, in my book, would be the most likely. Not for a vicious foul, but just for two stupid fouls or, you know, a dive and a dumb foul.
Yeah, okay, I could definitely see Dele Alli. I'm going to go with Gary Cahill if he plays because Gary Cahill plus Eden Hazard in that Belgium game is bad.
Yeah, he is very slow. He's a freaking dinosaur, so yeah. I'm shocked if he makes it in the starting lineup.
But that would be my pick if he ends up there and Eden Hazard to draw the penalty. So, all right, so you wanted to go over some fun facts. Dr. Pete, is that correct?
Yeah, I've got a couple of real fun facts for everybody. You know, we like the World Cup history, and we've got people from all different countries listening in. How many different countries did you pick up in the last week?
The tracker, overall, we have 45 countries. In the last week, I think like 10, maybe okay. 10. I think so. I get little emails about it. But let's do your fun facts.
So my first fun fact... That is terrible.
You are so welcome. You are so welcome. These are Dr. Pete's fun facts. Go ahead, Dr. Pete.
How am I supposed to say my fun facts when you're doing that? All right, hold on.
I don't know. Get your fun facts.
Let me get together again. Hold on. I gotta
get your fun facts. All right, now we're gonna have Dr. Pete's fun facts. Good luck with that.
Let's go all the way back to 1950. So, unlike in other World Cups, Thomas, the 1950 winner was determined by a final group stage, with the final four teams playing in round-robin format instead of a knockout stage. And Brazil was 1 point ahead of Uruguay going into the final match, but Uruguay ended up winning. Skip ahead to 1974 when Johan Cruyff had his Holland kit, which was sponsored by Adidas, should have had three stripes. But old Johan was actually sponsored by Puma and would only wear two stripes on his uniform.
I saw a picture of that. That is awesome.
Yeah, Johan didn't care.
The rest of his team had three stripes and he only has two. When you're That's money.
If you do whatever you want. That's and my last true. Fun fact for you, Thomas, is in 1978, the Argentina numbers were handed out alphabetically.
That's fun. So Kempes was... assigned a number by his last name instead of the length of his shorts.
Correct. His shorts were definitely less than 10 inches.
They're like 4-inch shorts. They're so great. I love those shorts. All right, Dr. Pete. So those are fun facts with Dr. Pete. And I like those. I think those are cool. You know, we were talking about fun facts, and the clip that I used earlier to start the show with the Icelandic... commentator going absolutely berserk.
It's amazing.
Pete in the Euro.
It's kind of cheating because it wasn't a World Cup. But it's so Euro. Worth it just for, you know, soccer commentators in general.
Yeah. All right, so the fun fact I have for you is that is Gudmundur Benediktsson, who's the world-famous TV commentator. Ironically, he lost his day job 4 days after that goal. I don't know if you knew that.
Really?
I didn't. Yeah, he lost his day job. Really weird. Really weird story. They're like, oh, yeah, he had a really good World Cup and has this amazing clip that was heard around the world of him screaming his head off. And then he got fired from his job like 4 days later. It wasn't for his commentating job because that wasn't his full-time job.
Well, I hope that the Iceland manager does not lose his day job, Thomas, because he's actually a dentist. So if you need a root canal in Iceland during the World Cup, you're going to have to wait a few weeks.
Full of fun Icelandic facts. The last one is that same commentator, Gudmundur Benediktsson, his son, Albert Gudmundsson, son of Gudmund, obviously, is actually on the Icelandic World Cup squad.
Oh, that's pretty fun.
I know. That's fun. Any other fun facts for us?
That's all I got for now, but I'm sure there will be many more fun facts to come over the course of the tournament.
And they're going to happen thick and fast. So we have Saudi Arabia versus Russia on Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern time. Dr. Pete, what do you think happens in this match?
So I think Russia is going to come out with all their fans behind them and lay the sword to Saudi Arabia, as you say. I'm expecting probably 2-3 to nothing victory in this one. I think, you know, Russia is sound all the way around. Saudi Arabia has one of the weakest teams in the tournament, so I'm not expecting them to put up much of a fight, especially in the opener for their country. I expect possibly we might see Vladimir Putin without his shirt off. I'd say plus minus.
I don't think so, but we'll definitely see Putin. He'll definitely be clapping. And I think that it'll be a resounding win for Russia. And the second thing I predict, Dr. Pete, is that there will not be a problem in this match with fans, either racist fans or hooligans. I'm predicting there is no problem like that in this match.
Hmm. Now, do you think there's going to be problems later on in the tournament? And do you think it's going to be Russian hooligans? Or do you think it's just going to be hooligans from other countries?
That's a great question. I know that everybody's read the stories about the Russian hooligans and they're being sent basically into the woods. The Russians said that if you want to fight... you go and you pick a spot in the woods and you fight out there, like the Russian gangs and stuff. And it sounds to me like Russia has sent out the notice to pretty much all the criminals and said, look, this is a big deal for us. We're going to be convivial hosts. And if you're going to cause problems, we're going to do Russian elimination tactics and you're never going to be heard from again. So I think that there will be no issues during this match. I think there will be fan issues because there's always fan issues, but I believe that Russia will not be at the center of them. I'm a little worried about the racism stuff. I know that Danny Rose, the England outside back, he said that he wasn't going to have his family come and watch him play because he's worried about it. I really hope that's not the case. Russia does have a little bit of a history of racist chants. This is the World Cup. I'm really thinking that the FIFA will crack down on this and that Russia is looking to be a host and will not allow any kind of national embarrassment like that. I'm really crossing my fingers for that.
Yeah, I'm not sure why you're so worried about racism, because in 2016, FIFA actually disbanded its anti-racism task force because it had, quote, completely fulfilled its mission. So there's no racism anymore, Thomas.
Yeah, apparently not. Apparently not. Yeah, that's actually more worrisome than anything. But I do believe Russia is on top of things. You know, there's another interesting fun fact, now that we talk like this, is that the United States actually has the most fans going to the World Cup.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that, other than Russian fans, obviously. But the United States was second. Makes you wonder, did they buy their tickets before?
They did.
They got knocked out, or do we just have a lot of Americans who love soccer and they're going to go watch even though their team's not in it? I was pretty shocked.
I think it's probably both. You know, Americans have a lot of different heritage. Our own dad, you know, thought he was German mostly and ended up getting one of those DNA ancestry tests or whatever, and it's mostly Irish.
It only took him 69 years to figure out that he wasn't German.
Actually, he's in denial, so he's still saying he's German, which is fine. Like, it doesn't matter either way. It's just a point of fact that there's so much heritage in the United States that I think a lot of people are even closer than us. You know, we're many generations removed from German or Irish heritage, per se. Like, we don't speak the language, but there's a lot of people in the United States that are one generation or two generations removed from Poland or Germany or places like that. And for them, I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not the huge surprise to me that I thought it would be when I read it, if that makes sense. But it is a cool fact for sure. It'd be really nice if we had a team in it.
Yeah, and I think that the fact that we've sending so many fans over there strengthens our bid even more. But we'll see. Fingers crossed, 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Yeah, big deal there. All right, Dr. Pete, so what's your score line for Saudi Arabia versus Russia?
I'm going to say 3-0.
3-0. I like that. Yeah, I'm going to go with 3-0 as well to be uninteresting. So I think Russia gets a resounding win here, and I think that they go on to get out of this group. So the next thing we're going to do is we're going to pick the semifinalists and the finalists. Dr. Pete, why don't you start?
Okay, so I'm going to go with France and Brazil on one side of the bracket in the semis and Argentina and Germany on the other side. I really, really want to pick Belgium to beat Brazil and make it to all the way to the finals. But my heart wants to put him there, Thomas, but history tells me otherwise.
So who's your finalist?
Oh, my finalists are Brazil and Germany, and my winner is Brazil.
All right, so we're pretty close on this one. And one thing to remember is there haven't been that many winners of the World Cup. I think there's 8 total.
That's why I'd love to see Belgium find a way to win it. How fun would that be?
Yeah, I think Uruguay has 2 World Cup wins.
The world didn't exist in 1930.
That could be true. I'm actually, so for my semifinalist and my finalist picks, I mean, one thing you see, a lot of these teams are the ones that always win. You know what I mean? So for me, I have France and Belgium.
You did pick
in the
Belgium.
Semifinals. You like that?
I do like that.
And Spain versus Germany, and then France versus Germany in an awesome World Cup final. Germany wins and becomes the second back-to-back winners of the World Cup.
Okay. Yeah, France-Germany final would be really fun.
That would be a ton of fun for sure. And the reason that I picked Germany is that I think that all their players play on Bayern Munich, and that makes a huge difference in this tournament. That's really what it comes down to me. When you have so many talented players on Germany, France, Brazil, Belgium, Argentina, Spain, England, the fact that a team plays mostly on the same team it makes a huge difference to me.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And to me, the reason I picked Brazil to win it all is they've got the history. They've got the players on their squad that are capable of doing it. They were embarrassed the last World Cup, and I think they're going to be very focused and be able to get past. They've got a pretty easy route to the semifinals, other than, you know, they're probably going to play Brazil or England, but I don't think their route to the semifinals is that tough. And I really think they're going to come out guns blazing this tournament.
Yeah, and they also have that world-class player that you need.
Yes.
Exactly what you alluded to early in the episode.
Yeah, he can chain. He's the kind of guy that can score two goals in the final.
Let's move on to the last topic we want to talk about, and that is VAR, Dr. Pete. So give me some of your research that you've come up with.
Yeah, so you and I watch a lot of the Premier League. We don't watch as much in the other leagues, so we're not as familiar with VAR. We saw a little bit in the English Cup this year, the FA Cup, but other than that, we're not watching a whole lot of MLS. We're not watching a whole lot of Serie A or the Bundesliga, where it was instituted this year. So I had to do some digging and figure out exactly, you know, how the VAR is going to go into effect. Now, I'm definitely in favor of doing VAR. I'm a big NFL fan. I think you need replay, especially if you're a big fan of a team and you see a play overturned that would have cost you a win. I think you pretty much fall into the camp after that. But we have seen it in other leagues instituted in different ways, obviously, but it's made such a big impact on those other sports. And soccer, in particular, has so few scoring plays. And the referees really need to get everything about those scoring plays right, in my opinion.
Yeah, so you alluded to this earlier. There are going to be one or two plays in every single game, especially as you get into later rounds where the teams are so evenly matched, that decide the game. So I want to introduce VAR real quick before you get in any further, to just say that VAR, or the current form of top referee, is in check for decisions for four sorts of individual incidents. That's goals, including missed attacking offenses in the buildup, which could be like biting a guy off the play or kicking a guy in the junk off the play.
Offsides.
Yes. Penalties awarded and not awarded, including missed attacking offenses again. So again, they've doubled down on that with both of these, saying basically that if we miss something off the ball, we are now going to be able to review it in case the referee didn't see it. All direct red cards are subject to VAR, which is a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Vegas odds after you get a red card at any point in the game, your chances of winning go down dramatically. So you got to get a red card right. And sometimes the way Absolutely. That guys dive around now, it can be really hard to figure it out. I mean, when, who was it, Rivaldo took that ball supposedly in the face?
In the shins, yeah.
I mean,
that was terrible.
He probably would have gotten a red card for that ridiculous flop after that.
He would have gotten a yellow for simulation, but in my book, he gets a red card. You're right.
Yeah, despicable.
Yeah. Last thing, cases of mistaken identity, and this has happened in the World Cup where a player has been given one, two, and even three yellow cards.
This one is, I'm surprised they put so much of an emphasis on this, because it's obviously must have been a problem in the past, but it doesn't seem like it would happen that often. The other stuff happens on a regular basis.
Yeah, so that's the intro to VAR. Do you want to take anything else from there?
So let me give you a couple other technical specs. So there's 30 cameras all around the field. There's a bunch that are super slow motion, and then there's three or four that are ultra slow motion. So they've got a bunch, all different speeds. They can look at the plays all different angles. So there's really a lot of different things they can look at when they're trying to make their decision. There's an extra camera that's just for looking at whether or not the attacking players are offside. So that's sort of the nuts and bolts of it.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like there's going to be any retroactive bans either in the World Cup.
I'm not sure about that.
I've been researching it, and like you said, the VAR stuff for Russia has pretty gray.
Yes.
Like, it's really hard to find definitive information on it. I mean, the stuff that I found, it took me a long time to get it and dig it up, and it wasn't on FIFA's website. You know, I'm actually relying on the integrity of BBC.
It's shocking to me that no one is talking about it, and it's going to have one of the biggest impacts out of anything on this World Cup. And like I said, I think VAR rolled out appropriately, you know, doing it in all of the qualifiers, all of the leagues before you adopt it in the World Cup. And that's kind of the approach that the English Premier League and the Champions League has taken. They're letting other leagues hash out all the problems, but FIFA just said, oh yeah, let's vote. Oh, let's put it in. And the referees are not ready, Thomas. I'm telling you, they have not used it in any competitive games at all. Most of them, unless they're in, you know, the Bundesliga or one of the leagues that has it. So they're not ready to use it appropriately, and it's going to decide games. There's no question about it. At least one team in the tournament, I would guarantee it, is going to go home because of a VAR overturned decision.
I'm okay with that, as long as it's correct, obviously, and as long as it doesn't become a circus. I really don't want the refereeing and VAR to be the focal point of the World Cup.
Yeah, well, I think there will definitely be a lot of focus on it. Let me talk to you a little bit about the stats behind it. So I was looking, okay, what impact has it had on the leagues where it's been instituted? So the reason that they were so hasty in verifying it was that they strongly believe that it has definitely impacted the games in more than 20 leagues where they've done research. So
yeah, I've read that.
Yeah, the numbers they tout are looking at the accuracy of referee calls, it increased from 93% to 98.8%. And 98.8% is about, I think, as good as you're going to get. Maybe you can bump that up a few, you know, fractions of a percentage point. And so, and they also said in 9% of those games, video calls had a game-changing impact. That's 1 out of 10 games. And that's over 20 leagues, 972 matches. So that's a good sample size. The other thing real quick, so the Bundesliga had it just for one year, and they used the video assistant 70 times in 306 games. And these are the stats behind that. So they withdrew 23 goals and gave one goal. This is the kicker to me. So four clubs would have stood higher in the rankings without VAR in place. And one club, Borussia Dortmund, would have dropped from fourth to fifth place, meaning that it would have lost out on Champions League play.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So, and that's just that from one...
Especially when you're talking about Champions League play.
And that's just from one season. I mean, you're talking about a razor-thin margin being third, fourth, fifth place. That makes a huge difference. So I think there's no question that VAR, to me, is the way to go. I do not think instituting and just throwing it out there and see what happens before the World Cup was a very good idea. I think it's going to be a disaster, honestly.
Oh, I really, really hope you're wrong with that. You know, Ken has a great point about VAR, which is that it does slow play down a little bit. And honestly, FIFA officials have come out and said VAR delays could be as long as 10 minutes, which I think is
nuts.
It's
not going to be that.
And I never know, man. Like, I think there was an FA Cup match with Arsenal that it was really, really long, like 7 or 8 minutes. And Wenger was livid about it. You have to hope that that's not the storyline. I don't want racism to be the storyline. I don't want fan hooliganism to be the storyline. And I don't want VAR to be the storyline. But on the flip side of the VAR argument is the fact that in every World Cup, there have been penalty kicks or handballs or red cards that have been so questioned that you absolutely did want to have some kind of backup system for that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking specifically at one country, Argentina. So in 86, they had the Maradona handball goal. In 1990, they lost to Germany in the final on a very questionable penalty kick that might have been overturned by VAR. So, you know, you have probably one or two plays in every single World Cup that has either led to a firepower, you know, a great squad getting knocked out, or one making it to the finals and winning.
Yeah, I mean, what happens with Maradona?
Yeah.
Pete, you know, the hand of God goal. Absolutely. Does he get a yellow there? Does he get, I mean, he's not going to get a red, but does he get a yellow there? I mean, that changes the complexion of everything. Of course, about 5 seconds later, he scored the greatest goal in World Cup history, so made the point moot. But, I mean, that's absolutely a great point that the phantom goals and things like that. So, yeah, I look forward to seeing how the VAR rolls out. I really, really hope that it goes well. I'm just really excited the World Cup's starting. It's soccer.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm so pumped. I've got goosebumps right now.
As you should. Do you need me to play the Icelandic commentator blowing his top again?
You know, the Icelandic one is really good, but the Dennis Bergkamp one's still my favorite.
I understand that. So we get a chance for it all to happen. Saudi Arabia versus Russia kicks it off, and then we have four matches on Friday.
Big Friday, huge Friday.
Couple doozies in there, right?
Yeah, we got Portugal, Spain, and we've got Uruguay, Egypt.
Oh, I like those.
Yeah, I think two of the top five matches that you might see throughout all the group stages, actually.
That's pretty great. I'm fired up. So for Dr. Pete, I am Tom Miller saying thank you for joining us for our World Cup previews. We will continue with our reviews and previews as the matches go on, but we appreciate you listening in from all the different countries around the world, and we hope that everybody has an awesome time listening to this World Cup, watching this World Cup, and just enjoying the football. I want to let everybody know that you can actually reach out to us at the @ThreeBeardsPod on Twitter. If you troll me, I will probably hand it off to Ken and let him yell at you. But no, I'd love to have some soccer conversations with anybody from around the world. We love talking with you guys. We can be reached at Twitter. You can throw some stuff at us, or you can throw some stuff at us at our @threebeardspod@gmail.com. So you got a couple options. And let's get ready for the World Cup.